Some spirits live here a great number of years before they receive this relief, while others more quickly obtain it. The greatest cause which operates to relieve these spirits of these memories is love. I now mean the natural love, and this love embraces many qualities, such as remorse and sorrow, and the desire to make amends for injuries done, etc. Until a spirit's love is awakened, none of these feelings come to him. He cannot possibly feel remorse or regret or the desire to atone, until love, no matter how slight, comes into his heart. He may not realize just what the cause of these feelings may be, but it is love just the same. Well, as these various feelings operate, and he acts in accordance with them, a memory here and there will leave him, never to return, and as these memories in turn leave him, his sufferings become less, and after a while, when they have all left him, he becomes free from the law, and it, as to him, becomes extinct. But it must not be understood that this is a work of quick operation, for it may be years, long, weary years of suffering, before he becomes thus free and once more a spirit without 107, sin or these memories. This is the way the great law of compensation is satisfied. It cannot be avoided, but all its demands must be met, until sin and error are eradicated, and the soul return to a pure state. But this gradual release from these penalties does not mean that a spirit is progressing in his journey to the higher and brighter spheres, because even without this torture and torment, he may still remain stationary as to the development of his higher nature, mental and moral. But when he has been relieved of these sufferings, he is then in a condition to start towards the progression that I have spoken of. As you are tired, I will continue the balance of my discourse when I write again. With all my love, I am your true friend and professor, Joseph H. Salyards. I am here, Helen. Yes, I would be here no matter what happens. Well, you had quite a discourse from the professor, and a wonderful one it is. I am glad that he wrote you on the subject, as it clears many doubts that you or your friends may have. He has not finished yet, but he saw you were tired and stopped. My brain felt fatigued. Yes, that is what he said, and I am so glad that you realize that he uses your brain as well as your hand. Why, Ned, without your brain we could not write at all. So don't think that we merely use your hands, for your brain is the more important of the two. Your own true and loving, Helen. April 26, 1915. I am here, Helen. Let me write, 10, for I have been waiting so long for the opportunity to send a message to my soulmate and let him know that I am so happy, not only because of love that I possess in my soul but because he has a great deal of this abounding love. I am with him very often as he knows, and I am so glad for him that I can impress upon him my presence and love. We are all very much gratified that he is progressing so much in his soul and realize that he is progressing in the right way to a position here when he comes over to enjoy the bliss that is outside the spheres of darkness. Many spirits attend him in his serious talks to mortals of 10. This message is dated 1919 in Volume 4. The Paget Messages 1915, the truths of the spirit world as he knows them and the effect that they have on the spirits who listen to him and think of what he tells them. He must continue in this work, for he hardly knows or realizes the vast number of spirits who surround him and anxious to hear of those things that show the way to a new life. Now, to be a little more personal, I must tell him that when he talks in this way, I feel that he will surely be mine without the long wait that comes to many spirits who do not know the way and has not the longings for this love as he has. Surely God is good and loves his children, and we should thank him with all the gratitude of our souls, and never cease to render unto him the expression of our gratitude. There are many spirits present tonight, and for a fact are always present with him, for they learn that he has in him that which enables him to receive the impression of the spirits who are so anxious to meet with their loved ones on earth. This is a wonderful gift, and if men could only know that it is as interesting to spirits as it is to mortals, they would realize how blessed a man is who has a soul in unionism with the spirit world. I will not write more now, but only say that he must continue to proclaim the truths of God and not be disappointed when men do not heed or are indifferent, for in the end the seed that he sows will bear fruit, and he will see the results of his work when he comes to the spirit world. With my love and everlasting longings for him, I will subscribe myself his loving, Mary Kennedy. Note from Dr. Leslie Stone, as early as January 1915 before Mary Kennedy could write her own message and be able to control the mind and hand of the instrument, she was permitted to dictate her thoughts of love to Mrs. Helen Paget, who wrote through her husband Mr. James E. Paget the following: "Tell Leslie that he is so very dear to her that he must not let his thoughts of love wander away from her towards any other person upon earth or in the spirit world, that she loved him so long and only recently has she had the opportunity to let him know in a way that he could understand, that she feels as if she must just let her whole heart burst upon him with its great fountain of love for him. She is not able to express to him the extent or intensity of this love, but she does love him to the full limit of her capacity. When he lies down at night or when he awakens in the morning, she is 108, with him trying to flood his soul with her love and happiness." Mrs. Helen Paget further says, "Mary Kennedy will not be content to have Leslie think that her love is not his, for it is to its fullness, and tell him. He must believe her and that she is with him nearly all the time, trying to help him and make him feel her presence. She is not so far away that she cannot know at all times what his feelings are, and when he gets lonely and wants her love and help, he must try to become in rapport with her, even when he is alone in his room and thinks that no one is with him. She is his now and will be through all eternity. Only love like hers can last when disappointments and troubles come, and when they do come, then her love grows stronger, sweeter, and he must feel it more as he feels the need of it. She is not now trying to make him believe that she is only waiting for him to come over in order that he may know that she loves him with all her heart and soul, but she loves him in that way while he is on earth beset by all the cares that come to him. He must love her more and more each day, and he will find that his happiness will increase as this love grows. Tell him she is in the fifth sphere and is preparing a home which will be so beautiful that he will be more surprised than he will be at the beauties of the spirit plane where she is, for her home, in addition to having the beauties that are in that sphere, will have her love permeating it. She also has another love for him to become more intense and pure, which draws her nearer to her Father of love. This is the greatest of all love, and she so wants him to let his heart become filled with it also. It is his, if he will only seek for it and believe that the Father is ready to give it to him, for he is not only ready but anxious." And she further says, "Tell my dear Leslie to pray to God and ask that this love may be given to him and fill his soul, for if he does, he will receive it, and when he does, he will not only love God supremely, but will love his true soulmate with a purer and sweeter love than he can conceive of. And when he does that, he will find that his happiness will be so great and joyful that the little cares and troubles of his earth life will not be able to mar that happiness or make him to wish for any other kind. Because I am his and he is mine, and when he realizes that, he will know what soulmate love means. We are not for each other for a limited time only, but for all eternity. And even eternity will not be too long in the enjoyment of our mutual love. Oh, he is my own true soulmate and sweetheart, the Paget messages 1915, and I am so happy in that knowledge that my cup of joy seems to be full and running over. Let him think of me as being close by his side all the time, sharing his joys and sympathizing with him in all his sorrow, and he will feel that he is not alone. Tell him to try to become a true lover of God and the truths of his teachings by his Son, our brother and helper Jesus. I am a firm believer in these truths and know that they are true, and I want my dear soulmate to believe with me, for in that belief is found the great happiness which I tell you of. So Leslie dear, goodbye for now." Dr. Stone again notes, "Mrs. Helen Paget, in her writing through Mr. James E. Paget instrument, makes further comments, well, she loves him with a very pure and steadfast love, she is a lovely spirit and one who is filled with the love of her Father, and she is worthy of all the love that any man can give her. I am very fond of her and see a great deal of her. She is so gentle and loving and tender, and is loved by many spirits to whom she has administered consolation and help. Well, sweetheart, I must stop for tonight. Good night, with all my love. Your own true, Helen." April 27, 1915. Well, my darling son, I am so happy to be with you tonight and tell you that I am now in the second celestial sphere, where everything is so beautiful, and happiness exists to a degree that I cannot portray to you. I am in my own home, and what it is, I can scarcely describe, for you have no words which are adequate to give you an idea of what I may mean in attempting to describe the glories of this sphere. My home is of a material that you have no faint counterpart of on earth, and it is furnished with everything that is suited to make me happy and more thankful to the Father for his love and kindness. I am living all alone, but I have many visitors, and love is the ruling sentiment among all its inhabitants. No spirit who is not filled with this divine love of which I have so often told you can possibly live in this sphere. The spirit who has all the most wonderful intellectual acquirements, and is without this love, cannot enter this sphere, nor can the mere natural love of mortals or of spirits fit the spirit for inhabitancy here. Only the divine 109, love of the Father can make a spirit so at one with all the surroundings and atmosphere of love that here exists. When I left the first sphere, I was taken in charge by a most beautiful and glorified spirit, and carried from my home in the first sphere up to the entrance of the second sphere, where many other beautiful spirits were waiting to give me welcome, and such a welcome I never thought could be extended to a spirit who is progressing. But I was received with all the love and affection and evidence of joy that the spirits of this sphere have for a spirit who has progressed from the lower one. Oh, I tell you that my happiness was certainly beyond any conception of what I had in the home which I just left. I thought that the beauty and grandeur of the first sphere could not possibly be surpassed, but when I tell you that comparison cannot be made between the beauty of the two places, it is the best that I can do. My home was all ready for me, and I was carried by a whole host of spirits to it and told that it was for me, and that God had prepared it for my happiness and joy. It certainly is beyond description, and it would be useless for me to try to describe it. The spirits here are so much more beautiful than those of any other sphere. They are more ethereal, and their garments are all shining and white. Not one little speck reminds one of the earth or the grosser spheres of the spirit world. And here the music is entirely divine and of such a great variety, all telling of the great love of God, and sung in his praise and adoration. I have not yet seen all the beauties of this sphere, and I may later give you a fuller description of it. Yes, I met some spirits whom I knew on earth, but not many, some of the truly Christian men and women who lived and loved and worshipped God, and passed over long before I did. My own dear mother and father have progressed to this sphere and were ready to receive me, and how glad they were to welcome me and take me to their arms of love. Well, I must not write more tonight, as you are not in condition for extended writing. So with all my love, which is so much greater than when I last wrote you, I am your own true and loving grandmother. Anne Rollins, May 3, 1915. I am here, Professor Salyards. Yes, and I am very much pleased that you have, and that you are, the Paget Messages 1915, in such good condition to write tonight. Well, I desire to continue my discourse on the laws of the spirit world, as known to many spirits. The next law is, that no matter how much knowledge of material things and of purely physical laws a man may have acquired on earth, his knowledge is not sufficient to fit him for the higher things of the spirit life. Many men think that because they have this great knowledge of the material universe, they need not attempt to learn the laws which control the operations of spirit life, or the laws which determine the position and development of that part of man commonly known as the soul. This is a very great mistake, and all human beings, sooner or later, will realize the necessity of learning these more important laws of the soul development, and of the spiritual part of man. I never, while on earth, attempted to investigate these laws, and consequently, when I came into the spirit world, I was as a newborn babe in my understanding of these laws, and so will all humans be who have neglected the investigation and study of these laws, as I did. I would, therefore, advise every man to give his best endeavor to the study of these laws, and especially that part of them which deals more particularly with the soul's development and progress towards the greatest happiness. These laws are set forth and declared to a very large extent in the New Testament, and in some parts of the Old are many suggestions as to what a man should do to save his soul from death. And by this I mean the death that comes with neglecting to exercise all the qualities of the soul that a man is capable of exercising, when in the mortal life. A man may let his faculties of mind die by neglecting to feed them the proper mental food, and so with the soul. Of course, the soul never dies, as far as known, in the sense of absolute destruction and disintegration, but it can get into such a state of inertia or lethargy that, so far as it is a part of the activities of man, it may as well be dead. I don't mean to say that the mere neglect to exercise these soul faculties will cause a man's soul to remain dead forever, for that is not so. Sooner or later, either in the mortal life or in the spirit life, this soul will have an awakening, but that awakening may be delayed for many years, and even centuries, and, in its highest sense, it may never have an awakening. So let men know the importance of studying and applying these spiritual laws to their own selves while mortals, and when they come to be spirits, they will find what a great 110 advantage to their progression and happiness such study and application have proved to be. There is another law of the spirit world that is of vital importance to those in the mortal life, and one which they can learn, and that is, that no man can, of himself, save himself from the penalties of the law of compensation. I have written about this before, but it is of such vast importance, and affects all human beings to such an extent, that I feel justified in saying something more on the subject. This law of compensation is as fixed as any of God's laws, and cannot be avoided under any condition or circumstances, except one, and that is the redemption of a man's soul by the love of the Father entering into it, and making it at one with his own, and like his in all the qualities that partake of the divine essence. I know that many men do not believe that there can be any forgiveness of sin, because they say it is impossible to make clean, in a moment, the soul of a man that has been steeped in everything vile and sinful while living the life of a mortal. Well, this I believe to be true, and I do not think any of our greatest teachers of these highest truths attempt to decry the doctrine of instantaneous cleansing of a vile and sinful soul. At least, that is not the doctrine taught by the greatest of all teachers, the man of Nazareth, whom I sometimes see and converse with, and he, I believe, knows more of the laws governing the salvation of men, than any other or all other teachers combined. His teaching here is, that while a soul is not instantaneously cleansed by receiving a portion of the divine love, as we have heretofore explained it to you, yet the inflowing of such love into the soul of a man starts him into the way of right thinking, and causes him to realize that his soul is open to the influence of this divine love. So mortals, as well as spirits, may receive this awakening of divine grace, to a very large extent, as soon as they realize that this love is the only thing that will remove the penalties of this law of compensation. I do not believe that immediately after the sinner feels this love coming into his soul, he becomes a saint and at once gets rid of his evil nature, for that can hardly be. Such an instantaneous cleansing would scarcely serve the purpose for which the work of this redemptive love is intended. Some persons seem to be able to receive more of this love in a short time than do others, and, consequently, their complete redemption is more quickly accomplished. But to me, and I have, the Paget Messages 1915, experienced the inflowing of this love, and its effect upon my sinful nature, and upon my recollections of the deeds of my earth life which call into operation this law of compensation. There does not seem to be any probability of an instantaneous cleansing of the soul, so that a man suddenly becomes fitted to live in the celestial heavens, where the Father's love, in all its purity and completeness, exists. I know it is taught by many preachers, and it is also the dogma of some churches that the blood of Jesus cleanses from all sin, and that, in the twinkling of an eye, but you must not believe this, for it is not true. The blood of Jesus was spilled many centuries ago, and is now become a part of other elements of the natural world, and cannot save anyone. And I go further and say, as Jesus has taught me, that his blood never had any efficacy in saving anyone. He never taught that his blood could do any such thing, or that the shedding of his blood was in any sense, the means of saving a soul. He is not now teaching any such doctrine, and is disappointed that those who lead the masses of mankind should teach any such doctrine, because it takes their attention away from the one and vital principle which is necessary to their salvation. And that is, the new birth, which means merely the flowing into a man's soul and becoming a part of it, of the divine love of the Father. It does not come to a man because the blood of Jesus was a sacrifice, to appease the wrath and requirements of the Father, or because of any vicarious suffering of Jesus. But to return to this law of compensation, no man, by his own exertions, can save himself from the operations of this law, and he, so long as he has this idea of depending on his own powers, will have to pay the penalties. Of course, as he pays these penalties, he progresses nearer and nearer to a time and condition when the law will cease to operate upon him, and he will become comparatively happy, but such payment may require long years of suffering and unhappiness. So, I say, let man knows that for every act and deed and for not doing what he should have done, he will have to answer the law. I do not mean by this repetition to cause men to think that I delight in showing them that they will have to suffer and live in darkness for a time uncertain, for I do not take any pleasure in calling their attention to this great law, and the certainty of its operations. Rather, I do this to help men to avoid these sufferings and unhappiness, by seeking the love of the Father while on earth, because, from my observations, I 111, believe that it can be found more easily while in the flesh, than after a man becomes a spirit. Another law of the spirit world is that every human being of one sex has, on earth or in the spirit world, one of the opposite sex, who is his soulmate. The importance of this provision of the Father for the happiness of humans and spirits has never been fully understood by those who have not with certainty met and recognized their soulmates. I know that on earth men have claimed that certain of the opposite sex were their affinities, and with such claims as an excuse, have done much wrong and sin. But the soulmate is not an affinity which may be suggested by the passions or desires, but is one provided by the grace and love of the Father to live with the other soulmate through all eternity. Before they took on the form of flesh, they were united, and when, in accordance with God's plan, they separated and became mortals, they became no less soulmates, although they may not recollect their former unity or relationship while living the mortal life. But as certain as God lives, these two soulmates, at some time, after they become spirits, will learn their true relationship to each other, and will, if nothing insurmountable intervenes, come together again in true union and happiness. The mere fact that a certain man and certain woman are husband and wife on earth does not mean that they will live together as husband and wife through all eternity. If they are soulmates, they may, but if they are not, they will certainly separate after they enter the spirit world. That true relationship cannot be hidden here, and no mere form of relationship of husband and wife will suffice to keep the persons together. The great truth of soulmates is one which needs further elucidation, and one which I will try hereafter to explain more fully. But for now it is sufficient to say that every man born of woman has his soulmate, either on earth or in the spirit world, and vice versa. Well, I have written a great deal tonight and you are tired, and so am I, and so I will continue at another time the rest of my discourse. With all my love and best wishes for your happiness and success, I am, your old professor and friend, Joseph H. Salyards. May 6, 1915. I am here, your friend Cyric. Well, I first want to say that I am so very glad to have the opportunity to write to you, thanks to that, the Paget messages 1915, beautiful wife of yours. I tell you, Paget, that she is a wonder, and you should feel yourself a highly favored man to have such a soulmate. She is not only beautiful but so full of love and so wise in the things that pertain to the higher life. Why, she tells me things that I never in all my life thought could exist, and when she shows me the truths of the Father's love and how beautiful and beyond conception her home is, I can scarcely contain myself. She is helping me so much in my progression. Of course Rose is also, but Rose does not have that great angelic love that your wife has, and is not able to tell me of the wonderful things that may be mine, and the way that I may obtain them. Why, I want to tell you that the fortunate day of my life was the one when I met you at the Coburns and commenced the investigation of the spiritualism that you were seeking to learn. Many times you told me to seek for the higher things and the soul development, and I heard you and did not know what you meant. I knew that I was not a very bad man as men go, and would wonder what you meant. Sometimes I got a glimpse of what you might mean, and would ask you, as you may remember, if you thought I was a very bad man, and you would tell me, no, but that I must give my thoughts to higher things and get the love of God in my heart. Well, I did not comprehend what you meant, and when you told me to pray to the Father, I did so, but somehow I did not understand just how to pray. But now I realize what you mean, and what an awful mistake I made in not trying to learn what you tried to tell me when on earth. Well, when I arrived in Richmond I felt a little sick, but had no idea that I was so near death. In fact, death was not in my thoughts, as I had induced myself to believe that I could live to be an old man, and so you can imagine my feelings. After I had been stricken and was unconscious for quite a while, I suddenly recovered my consciousness and found myself looking down on my body all cold and lifeless. I thought it was not my body but someone else's that resembled me very much and that I was still in my body, but as I tried to make myself known to my friends who had gathered around, I found that they did not hear me or see me, and then I remember the description that you had read to me of your wife's passing over, and the conviction came to me that I was no longer immortal. And to further convince me, just then Rose came to me and said, Frank, I am keeping my 112th promise, you are with your soulmate never again to return to your mortal life and wonder what kind of looking girl your soulmate may be, for now you see her as she really is, and you also feel her arms around you and her kisses upon your cheek, and I know that you would not go into that body again for all the world. Oh, I tell you, that such a reception, accompanied with such beauty and love, was enough to make a man forget that he had ever been a mortal, and for the time I forgot that I had. So you see, my passing was not as undesirable as I had thought it would be. What a great blessing to have the belief that I had when I was with you all as to my Rose. It may seem strange to some, but I know, not to you, that my belief in Rose was so great, that to me she was as real as if I had met her in the flesh and was separated from her only a few miles in expectation that some near day she would come on the train to be with me. I cannot tell you what my happiness was. I had no doubt about my being a spirit, and thoroughly believed that I had left the earth, so far as occupying my body was concerned, forever. I had no desire to return to it, and my thoughts did not turn to things material. My Rose was sufficient for me. She occupied all my thoughts, and my being was wholly with her, and my happiness was a thing no mortal can understand or believe, if I were capable of telling him. Such beauty and love! Well, I will not try to tell you of it, for I cannot, but only say that when you come over and your soulmate meets you, you will lose your breath and wonder how such a man as you are now, could be loved by such a being of beauty. A short time after I had been with Rose, your wife and others of your band came to me, and with them my own dear mother, who was so beautiful and loving to me, and I was so happy that I cried with all my heart and soul, but for joy. Well, such was my passing and such I wanted it to be, but when on earth I had no conception that it could be such. As soon as I could recover my breath, as we say on earth, I made many inquiries about the things that I saw and which I had wanted to know when on earth, and received information, but I want to tell you that some things that I heard seemed familiar, and I thought that I had heard them before, and so it was, because in our communications and in our conversations and in our circle I had heard them. So you see what the Paget Messages 1915, privilege it is for a man to have the opportunity of learning of the spirit world while still on earth. You and Dr. Stone and the Colburns are much favored in your opportunities to hear of so many of the things that pertain to the spirit life. I am acquainted with Dr. Stone's Mary, and tell him that she is real and is certainly his soulmate, as was I his friend and patient when on earth. She is a beautiful spirit and so good, and loves him with a love that he cannot now understand, but which he will someday. Tell him, I am more fortunate than he, because I came first and partook of the love of a beautiful, fine and loving woman, but his time is coming, and I am only more fortunate than he, in that I came to mine a little sooner than he will to his. I have met Bright Star, and I certainly was surprised. I thought to meet an Indian squaw, but instead, I met a spirit the most beautiful and bright, with God's love emanating from her whole being. She was glad to see me, and reminded me that I was not a stranger, as she had seen me many times at Mrs. Ripple's seances. But she said, "Then you only knew me as a little Indian girl, simple but accommodating.